Okej. Välkommen till avsnitt 33 av Från UFO till UAP podcast. En verklighet i förändring. Är du helt ny till podcasten så skulle jag rekommendera dig att börja på avsnitt 1. Det ger den bästa vägen in i ämnet. Innan vi kör igång så vill jag också bara passa på att berätta att Patreon, det är det bästa sättet att stötta arbetet med podden. Eftersom jag inte gör någon reklam i podden så är Patreon och min lilla webbshop det enda sättet att supportera. Webbshoppen är precis nytankad med över 100 nya konstverk eller prints. Så har du tvekat och väntat på det rätta motivet innan så bara måste du gå in och titta igen. Kanske din nästa vägg finns där inne nu. Du hittar webbshoppen på ufotilluap.se och Patreon, det hittar du på Patreon under namnet ufotilluap i ett ord. På en överraskande stabil lina kopplar han upp Portugals man i Bryssel, Francisco, EU-parlamentarikern Guerrero. Det är han som ligger bakom senaste tidens UAP-lagförslag i EU. Ja, i EU-parlamentet då alltså. Jag är nyfiken på honom. Hur kommer det sig att han som enda politiker i parlamentet lyfter denna fråga? Vart kommer intresset ifrån? Och vilka hinder har han stött på vägen?
So today we're honored to have a distinguished guest who stands out as a unique voice in the political landscape, especially in the context of the European Union's engagement with UAP issues. Joining us is Francisco Guerrero, a member of the European Parliament who has notably taken the initiative to address the UAP question within the EU. His dedication to bring seriousness and scientific scrutiny to UAP discussions at such high level of governance makes him a fascinating figure, both as a person and politician. We're eager to delve into his insights and understand the journey that he has led him to the champion this cause. So, Francisco, welcome to the show. How's your day been so far?
Hello, thanks for having me. It has been a very hard day. I started with some trilogues. This means the negotiations between the Parliament, the Council, that is the Member States, and the Commission to talk about a mechanism of economic support to the Western Balkans. So six countries that want to have a common approach to EU law, to improve their economic situation. And we are having this economic mechanism that we had to agree upon the conditions, the transparency, the value of money, that is €6 billion to these countries, and the conditionalities also surrounding this money in the morning. And so we had the first 4 hours of the day was with this. We managed to arrive into a conclusion, and now it's going to be voted in the specific committees and then in the plenary. But it was a tough morning, so to say. Yeah. And then in the afternoon I was doing a lot of small stuff because we are ending the mandate, so there's a lot of small stuff to arrange and to get the house clean, so to say, so everything is organized, so we can have an end of the mandate very very straightforward with all everything organized, so everyone can live with their conscience at ease and with everything organized, everything planned, as it has been for the last 4 years and 8 months, so to say. Yeah, it's more or less 5 years of mandate.
What's the feeling? What's the feeling of that? Of leaving after 4 or 5 years mandate, leaving the Brussels over to someone else?
Yeah, well, it's a great honor. It's the European Union is a project that is very complex in a way, but also very simple. It's a project of peace. It's a project of dialogue, of concession, of understanding that we are not alone and our only vision. It's not the one that we should push forward, and so there's a lot of debates. There's a lot of negotiation. There's a lot of intricacies because there's a lot of technical meetings, for example, that are made. So we have huge debates surrounding technical subjects, political ones, national sensibility, regional. There's a lot of things that encompass this job, and also meeting a lot of people, trying as much as we can to project this idea that the EU is very important for the member states and for citizens, that there's a lot of problems, obviously, but we do live in a very positive region. We see the examples all around Europe, and we have a wonderful capability of building this political project for the better. And for these 5 years, it has been an honor to work on several topics. I've been in 4 committees: agriculture, fisheries, budget, and internal market, and citizens, consumer. But I also work on the topics that were on different committees, and it was a huge experience. I learned a lot, and obviously now UAPs. So yeah, it has been a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I hope that Europeans understand that the extremists and the far right and the far left don't have nothing to add to this beautiful project, only a dystopian view of society, a very nationalistic approach, the division, the same status quo, and the connection to oligarchy and very tyrannical governments outside the EU. We see that, for example, with the far right, that has connections with Putin, that has connections with regimes that are not democratic, and also for the far left, that has connections with, for example, Xi Jinping, the Communist Party in China, and other, for example, Iran. And so we kind of understand that we have a lot of possibilities, on the contrary of the US, that is a bipartisan political landscape. Here in the European Union, thankfully, we have a lot of solutions, from the most conservatives to the most progressives. You have a lot of groups and you have a lot of parties. And I think that's also the beauty of our democracy. It has problems, but there's a lot of options for you to choose. And it's important also for citizens to participate, to vote, and to express, for example, these ideas that we are going to debate, UAPs, to candidates. Why don't they press also candidates to talk about this issue and to put them on their political programs, for example, for these elections? It's a EU subject. They could do it. Why not? And I think it's also an opportunity for politicians or aspiring to be politicians to understand that this is a topic that is dear to, I would say, millions of Europeans. And so we should debate it in a very open and transparent way, reducing the stigma and having a scientific debate surrounding the topic.
Yeah, and we will delve into more of that, like what's to come and how what you would address as a EU citizen if you weren't a political already or wasn't in the EU Parliament. But to start off, what sparked your interest into the unidentified aerial phenomena issue at all?
My mother was a biologist, a professor, and so she always taught me to be critical about the status quo, to look at society in a very critical and scientific way, to question authority. And so I always had this approach of reading a lot, learning a lot, checking documentaries, trying to always have an open mind about subjects, but analyzing them through a scientific lens with facts, trying to, as much as we can, because we all have bias, trying as much as we can to have a very pragmatic and scientific approach to the topics. And so on this subject, for me, it's the same as any other topic. For example, I talk about animal welfare, I talk about veganism, I talk about climate change, I talk about housing, I talk about internal market. All of these topics, they seem different, but in my lens, they have the same approach. And so when I talk about UAPs, I talk about them through a scientific lens and through a very critical approach. And so obviously drinking from that experience that comes from the nurture, the intellectual nurture that my mother gave me, and also my upbringing and education also, it also drank from the actions that were recently held in the Congress of the US, which several professionals came and testified. And obviously there was a push, a bilateral, a bipartisan push also to debate the subject. And so I thought this could also be an opportunity for me to debate the topic here in the European Parliament.
And was it at that point, at the congressional hearings in July last year, that you decided to address the issue politically here as well? Were you inspired by that? Was that
yes, like, I think it was a continuation, and I drank from that action that showed that this is we know that this is a worldwide phenomenon, but I think why should only the US be politically active on this front? I think that we have a lot of work to do here in the European Union, although it's a different approach, because the topic here, it's not as strong as it is in the US due to several questions. But if the phenomena is worldwide, and I had several meetings with professionals, for example, of civil aviation, that reported that they wanted to a system here in the EU that could encompass their needs to report this phenomena, to understand scientifically what they were, to don't have the stigma surrounding this reporting system. I thought, okay, this is a thing that should also be debated here in the Parliament, and that's why, naturally, talking with friends and people that are also interested in the subjects, I thought, okay, what are the tools that I have here in the European Parliament that might add up positively to the debate? And so I started making questions to the European Commission. I made three of them. Only one for now was replied. I made an individual motion for resolution to improve the regulation surrounding the civil aviation. So concretely, it's the regulation 376/214. And I made two interventions in the European Parliament, in the plenary, regarding the topic, but also an event last April, the 20th, here in the Parliament also, promoted by me. That talked with several expertise, also Ryan Gates, Graves, about the topic. And so one of the best also presentations was civil pilots that talk about his experience. And it was very interesting. It was very scientific. We had a big impact on the social media, the meeting is on my YouTube, so everyone can see it. And this was, I think, one of the most important steps, because it shows that there are some individuals, for now just me, but hope that the next mandate will be more, that are willing to debate this topic without the fear of stigma, without the fear of being correlated with some weird conspiracy or the noise that normally surrounds this topic, because my approach is very straightforward, is very scientific, is very simple, and I think that is the way for us to continue this debate that is not just focused on the US and has a lot of layers. Our political landscape and institutions are different from the US, but the goal, I think, is the same, is for us to have better tools to understand what these UAPs and unidentified anomalous phenomena are, and then we try to arrive at the conclusion, not the other way around, that sometimes is what happens. It's already stating that it's a non-human extraterrestrial life, or it's just a natural phenomena, or it's just human technology. So some groups already have their predefined notion, and they jump afterwards into what they should think they would be the considerations. And my mind process and my political process is the other way around. So having more data to reach a conclusion or not, so we can step by step improve the collective debates on the topic. And I think also correlated to that, interrupt me when you feel that it's
necessary. It's okay.
And correlated to that, there are two important perceptions. First, that there are millions of citizens and several NGOs and institutions that are not listened surrounding this topic, and so they are continuously disconsidered, and they are not listened by the politicians and the EU institutions. And I don't think that's a fair assessment of the democratic process that we should be having. And correlated to that, this is a misrepresentation of the improvements that we should also have in the democratic institutions. What do I mean by this? Is that if you don't understand the overall feeling of millions of citizens that are very concerned about this topic, that they want to learn more, that they want to understand what it is, whatever the conclusions may be, we are leaving this topic to some fringe, noisy considerations that are probably not true, and we are leaving the grounds for populists, for people from the fringes, the political fringes, that may use this topic to undermine the EU project or undermine the democratic institutions with concepts of, for example, deep state or something like that, that in the EU, it's not even fair to have that correlation, at least from the knowledge that we know. And so I also think that this is an improvement of our institutions. It's a connection to the citizens and to several NGOs and organisms that talk about the issue, that the scientific community wants to talk about it. Even recently, Ross Coulthard had an interview with Michio Kaku, a very known physicist, that also showed that the academia is interested and they want to explore more and they just want more data. And I don't really feel that this topic should be closed or mismanaged just because we are still afraid of some media coverage or passion from certain types of groups that probably want to retain the power or the knowledge that they have. And so in the end, I think we need leadership. And in my small part, I'm doing what I think it's possible to help out the cause overall.
And about that stigma, and what would you say to other politicians think? Because I think that there's a lot of politicians thinking about this issue because they know that it is a big issue for millions of people in the EU, as you say. But I guess the stigma is scaring them off from a political career or whatever it could be. How have other politicians and peers reacted to your interest and initiatives on UAP so far?
Well, I think the main problem is that politicians are more concerned with their political career than with the scientific approach to this topic. And if they were not so concerned about the political career, maybe they would pursue something that is probably very dear to their heart or very dear to their community. Mm. And if as politicians we are more concerned about our political future than with our values, with our curiosity as human beings, as with the process of learning also in different areas, I think we are doing a bad service for ourselves and for our community and overall for democracy. That's why I also feel that it depends a lot on individuals, because some individuals have more these characteristics of being more willing to question authority, to put into consideration probabilities of having a higher degree or a higher rank or their professional future, just to keep their values and to really make the most out of their function. For example, for me, it would be unwise if I would end up the mandate and not do anything about this subject, when I know there's a lot of people that really want more information. There are a lot of questions that are unanswered. And so I would sleep with my conscience not at ease, because I would not have made something about it. And you are not neutral. There's no such thing as neutrality. So or you just don't do nothing, or don't do something, or you just act. And in my perception, we should act. Obviously, the majority of the political individuals have a different, I would say, perception of life, of how we should be in life, and they are very they are more calculistic, I would say. They are more afraid of the political backlash. Although I think if you go this path with the tools and the mechanisms that I'm using, I don't really feel that this may undermine their political future. On the contrary, I think it's also the way you present yourself. And if you have bad media, it's what it is. If you stick to your guns and you are coherent and you are transparent and you are scientific, I think that even if we had like a period of bad coverage or mocking or something like that, it's fine, because in the end, the truth will show you that you're on the right path. Either you had this conclusion or that conclusion, your way to reach those conclusions were the ones that had to be had, because you are just making the questions, you are just promoting that the EU, for example, in my case, has better monitoring and reporting system, that this system considers UAPs, and in the end, we just assess the data that we have. And we can assess that this is just natural phenomena, everything, or there's technological, human technological advances that we don't know, that also has repercussions, but okay, or it's something else. And in the end, the goal, it's not to understand what it is per se, is to have the tools so we can better assess what it is. And I think that's the most reasonable thing to do as a politician, and I don't really feel that anyone should back down from that perspective, from that path.
No. Well, and as you said before, we're now closing into this mandate period and going into another. What advice would you give to EU citizens who wants to really push their political representatives to take the UAP issue more seriously? I mean, you are one as a yourself, and as a citizen, I can really feel that. Oh, you know how it is. You feel like, or maybe you don't, because you're on the other side. But you feel like I can't do so. I can't do nothing about it. Sure, I can send a mail, but does it really matter if I do it? Does it?
There's always a reaction to an action, and so I think the worst thing that we can do as citizens is to have the feeling and the inaction due to the. Or with the perception that we are not having an impact. For example, I'm a member of the European Parliament. I'm an elected one. I have a lot of tools at my disposal, but I cannot stop the war in Gaza. And for me, that's a moral quarrel that I have every day. Supposedly, a citizen looks at me and says, this guy has a lot of power. He and his group could stop this with a click, and it's not true. And I also feel that that sense of sometimes despair of not stopping something that for me it's really obviously this annihilation of the Palestinian for me should stop. Period. There's the question of 7th of October. For me, it's bilateral when we just reach a level of total insanity, that you kill UN members, you kill medical staff, you kill people that are working in NGOs, just feeding people, you are blocking food and medicine to reach these individuals, you have indiscriminated killing, you continue the annexation of the West Bank, and I also don't really feel that this benefits Israel. It benefits the Zionist regime and the far right, but not the Israeli. And there's a lot of Israeli that are fighting to stop this. And so to make the points that you stated. I could also feel that, well, I cannot stop this, so I would not do any action, but I continue. Mm. So even today, I knew that one resolution that I made to create a mechanism of economic support, the one that I was talking about to the Western yeah. Balkans, and we also have to Ukraine due to special conditions, in this case, Ukraine war, and the Western Balkans, because it's a region that needs support to better integrate in the future in the European Union. I also introduced a resolution for Palestine, for us as an European Union, to have a special mechanism that could help them rebuild not only the Gaza Strip, but also the West Bank, but it was rejected in the committee. And so my party, my group, the Greens, were the only ones supporting this motion. And it was so simple as having economic resources to help those that now don't have anything, don't have any infrastructure, water, sanitation, roads, buildings, hospitals. And it was rejected. Would I stop there? No, I continue. So as a citizens, you always have the power. You can write an email, you can try to talk with your with the leaders of the list of each group. You can make interesting things. For example, as an organization, you make a graphic saying, okay, these parties were the ones that were questioned, these ones were the ones who replied, this did not reply, this one replied positive, this one replied. And today we have social media, so this can be shared and everyone knows about it. In my country, these guys are not interested. Why did not they say anything? And people can start just talking. I don't know. Yeah. It's an idea.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of questioning. Don't be afraid of pushing politicians, because in the end, politicians are just citizens. They are just citizens. They are not any kind of the divine creature. They don't have special powers. They have huge responsibilities, and one of those responsibilities is to listen to citizens and to bring their concerns to the democratic institutions. So if this question of UEPs is a concern to thousands, if not millions — I always say millions because I do believe there are millions of citizens that really want this topic to be debated. Well, they are not doing their job. And for example, now we have a lot of, obviously, there's a lot of sci-fi in the middle, there's a lot of novelty, but we have a lot of these episodes on History Channel, on Netflix, talking about this subject. And so billions of people are exposed to this. Why are not politicians talking about this? I'm sure that they also saw these clips, that they also have questions, that they might have different opinions. And so why don't also they explore this? There's nothing wrong on this. In the end, we can all just end up with the conclusion that this is nothing, okay? Just natural phenomena, or it's just human technology, a new development that we have. Fine or not. Why don't we catch more?
And I also think the strange thing just about this issue is the risk-reward contradictions to each other, because if it's quite a low risk to just research it, because the reward could be huge. So it feels like it's a no-brainer if you do it. But the bureaucracy and the big things in the EU are going so slow in the issue, given the potential huge implications of testimonies from witnesses like Ryan Graves or David Grush. Why do you think EU has been so slow to engage with this issue? Is it only the stigma, or is it every other questions that are taking place in the quite depressing world around us right now?
Well, thankfully there are always wonderful people like you that's brighten this world. So the hope is not lost. But the EU is a different geopolitical space than the US. The US has a different hierarchy of interests. We know that the military industrial complex in the US is massive, and they they are clearly hiding something or not making available some information. For which purpose, we don't really know for now, to be concrete. We have some indications, we have some testimonies, we have some clues, but we really don't know what's at stake. In the EU, it's different because, for example, the military is mainly competence of the member states, although there's some cooperation at the EU level, but it's member states that have their organization, their planning, and their capability of coordinating this sector, the military. Although, for example, in civil aviation, it's more at European level. And so we have several regulations. That's why I presented this individual motion for resolution to include in this regulation of civil aviation a concrete monitoring of UAPs, because you can, as a civil pilot, you can already report if you have safety issues, for example.
Yeah.
But as it was stated on the, and if your listeners have the opportunity to check the event that we did,
yeah,
the flight pilots said that he had some events that were not threatening the security, and so it didn't encompass on that part. And so even if he reported, it would just be lost and it would not be considered because it was not a safety issue. And that's why we should look at this in an overall perspective and trying to open the space through several legislation to talk about the subject. And there's a lot of layers. You can go also, for example, and that was a question that I made to the European Commission, about the proposal that is coming for the European Space Law. So the Commission is making a proposal to harmonize the sector of space to make it more competitive, to make it more appealing to investors, and also to scale up some technologies. And in our perspective, space is more used here as a scientific tool than the US. US space is more, it's mainly in the sphere of the military. Although you have obviously some scientific approach, but it's more on the military sphere. Here is different. And so through that European Space Law, we could also add something regarding the monitoring system of this phenomena. Because we do know there are some reports that they also, naturally, by consideration and by logic, they also happen in space. And so, and curiously, there was an organization of the Netherlands. It was the UAP Coalitie Netherlands. I don't know if I'm speaking correctly, but it's an NGO that talks about these issues in the Netherlands that made a comment in the period of opening questioning, because when the Commission makes a proposal, it has 30 days, for example, for civil society to make comments. You can do it as an individual, you can make it as an NGO, an organization. And so one of the comments there on the law was from this organization to for this law to have a monitoring system regarding UAPs. So you see, a small step is recorded in the parliament. Everything is, or the majority of things are transparent and saved on the parliament's website. And so in this question, in this topic, you have there that reply. And so there are many things we can do.
So that's the thing. Also, you can always, there is always a window of 30 days that that you as a citizen can propose or comment your own, like in, how to say it, but like your own comments into this law proposals.
That's
wow.
That period was closed. I don't really know the period, if it's 30 days or 60 days. Normally it's 30 days, but I don't want to be imprecise, but you have that period. And if you know or are interested or you have a network of connections and someone says, oh, this law or this regulation is open to comments, you go as an institution and you comment and you make your assessment. And it's interesting because, for example, on this topic in the pre-space law, this NGO made this comment, and well, it's at least they cannot say they didn't see it because it's there, it's public, and so it's relevant.
That's a really good mechanic that people maybe and organizations should use more, I think.
And for example, even if the European Commission in their proposal, first proposal, don't talk about the issue, then this NGO can ask the Commission or can ask an MEP, a member of the European Parliament, to make a question to the Commission questioning why they did not consider this this topic. And so you have a lot of avenues to use that as a political tool. So again, if you do something, then you have a reaction. If you do nothing, no reaction will come.
How do you plan to, or do you plan to continue your involvement in this issue, UAP issue, after leaving the European Parliament as well? Or what's your plan there?
Well, my first plan is to rest, read. Yeah. I have a lot of books that I want to read. I want to
on the issue, maybe.
I think I have at least one or two on the issue from credible people. So, but I have a lot of things that I want to read. I want to spend time with my family, especially my two daughters. We are also in the process of adopting a third one. So, on that sense, we never know. In Portugal, it takes a lot of time, but. I want to have time for my wife, for my friends, for myself, but I will always be open to help as much as I can as a citizen, as a former politician, in every way that I can. I feel that if anyone invites me like you do to talk about the subject, I will with pleasure. If anyone invites me to speak abroad, I'm also available. If any other MEP or group wants to debate the topic, I'm willing to help, obviously. And in my sphere, in my knowledge also in Portugal, I will try to understand better the situation, especially because we also have institutions and I don't really know how the topic is being handled, because I think that we have an NGO that talks about this issue, but it's not connected to the political power. And so there's no connection between what's happening, for example, in civil aviation or the military. And well, as much as I can, I will help and I'll try to push this topic further. But I'm waiting for other MEPs and politicians to talk about it, because, well, I just opened the door and I hope that someone will enter and use this this knowledge to continue the work.
And looking ahead, what is your hopes for the global approach to understanding and addressing UAPs? If we look like 10 years from now, what would your dream situations look like?
Well, I think at least in the European Union, we have one danger. There is this topic being hijacked by extremist groups, political groups, for example, on the extreme right or on the extreme left, I would say more on the extreme right, with the perception that there's a deep state, that something is being cooked, some noisy conspiracy that traditionally comes from these groups. This can backlash and can bring this aura of conspiracy to the topic, which I don't feel that obviously it's good for those who really want an honest debate, a scientific approach to the topic. Or we can just have the traditional apathy that is in the next 5 years, no one will really talk about this issue and the conversation is being led by the US. And the US has different dynamics, has different interests at play. And I think we could also, because this, as you said, is a world topic, we could also have a positive approach here. Because we may be more open to change some legislation, to make some headlines, surrounding the topic if we have people that have that leadership. Let's see how the next mandate will be composed and if there's anyone that is willing to lead the way on this topic. It's uncertain, so to say.
Yeah, I really hope that you're right, that someone is coming after, or a lot of politicians are taking your back and doing the same thing. And for example, in the aviation part, where it's quite clear that we need to do something quite fast to not cause safety issues in disguise. I'm so glad that you could join me here today, Francisco. Very grateful for talking to you and getting these insights from the heart of Brussels. It really helps me, and I'm sure the listeners that I have, to understand the mechanics and what they also can do to help you push the issue now when you're leaving the parliament further on. So you're just starting up something big here, I'm sure of that.
Well, I just feel that I'm just another one pushing for better understanding of the topic. In reality, there's always someone pushes the boundaries of some topics. On this one, and not on several others, because I also talk about others that are not very friendly, so to say, and that the majority don't really want to talk about. But on this specifically, clearly I'm the only one in the 720 MEPs and in thousands of politicians that work in the EU bubble. I'm the one that is making this step, but I don't want to be known as the first one or the only one, or I don't even want to be known. I just want to help the cause, to bring more light and more people and institutions to this debate. And if that is my part, my role, I will be happy and I can sleep with my conscience at ease. And I think that's what should drive all the politicians. Not the projection, not the ego that surrounds a lot these bubbles, but the willingness just to make a positive change in the world and a positive change in the institutions that represent citizens. In the end, that's just the improvement of democracy. And I think that's also why we are elected, to improve our institutions and to debates the tough and not answered questions that still exist. And UAP phenomena is one of those.
Mm. Thank you very much. And as I said, I think a lot more than me are very grateful for pushing the issue and being the first one and hoping for a lot to come from others. So have a super good last period of this mandate, and have a good rest after and vacation with your family.
If anyone wants to contact me, it's me that replies my social media, so feel free. I'm always willing to debate anything and to participate if I'm capable on this and other topics. So thanks again for having me, and for the very interesting questions, and all the best for you also.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Okej. Där sätter vi punkten för idag. Jag tycker att det blev ett mycket trevligt samtal med Francisco. Och även om man märker att han gärna understryker både en och tre gånger att han vill närma sig frågan ur ett vetenskapligt perspektiv och lite andra avståndstaganden från bredare aspekter än okända föremål i luften, så tycker jag att Francisco kändes öppen och hjärtlig. Vad tycker ni? Lämna jättegärna en kommentar på Spotify. Även om jag inte kan svara på kommentarerna där, så är det väldigt spännande att läsa vad ni skriver. Ni får jättegärna också komma med feedback om vad ni tycker om en intervju på engelska i denna svenska podcast. Jag har övervägt alternativet att göra som på Sveriges Radio, där de översätter svaren från den som de intervjuar på engelska. Så att man hör sådär, som ni vet, början av svaret och sen kommer översättningen. Så där vill jag också gärna veta vad ni tycker. Glöm nu inte att surfa in på ufotilluap.se och kolla på all ny konst som går att beställa. Som vanligt, tack till Hampus för klippning och redigering av podden. Det betyder allt. Tills nästa gång. Lev väl!